welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Turn the Page. I'm your host for today, Jen, and I am joined by a very talented and prolific writer, and who is here to talk about a book that I have been reading obsessively for the past few days, and I'm so excited to chat about it. So let's hop into it. Welcome. Could I ask you to introduce yourself and your book, please?
Sure. I'm Lisa Grunwald, and the novel is The Evolution of Annabelle Craig, and it's set in a small town in Dayton, Tennessee in 1924. And it's about a woman who's trying to find her way through a very chaotic time to figure out who she is.
Before we get into the book itself, could you perhaps tell us a little bit about your career and your journey to the book? I'd love to know about, what led you to this project. If you wouldn't mind, too, I did a little poking around your website. I'm very interested in the role of procrastination arts in your project.
I love talking about procrastination arts because I'm rarely asked about it, but it really is what I do to procrastinate between writing projects or during writing projects. And it's I do collages made out of pencils and scraps of paper. And I say on the site it's what I do with pencils and paper when I'm not using them to write. So yeah. Procrastination arts, one word. It's on Etsy. Sign up. I'm always available to complete your orders. But more important at the moment is this book. And you asked, how I came to it. This is my seventh novel. I started when I was 26 with a novel called Summer, which was highly autobiographical because when you're 26, what else do you have to write about but what you know? And what you know is usually your own life. I was an editor at Esquire for many years and at Life magazine, where I wrote and edited. And then I started writing books full time, did some anthologies that I had a great time doing because I did them with my husband, and we had a wonderful time working together. Anthologies of letters, anthologies about marriage, and then I started writing historical fiction. And my first historical fiction was about it was called The Irresistible Henry House, and it was about a boy who's raised in a practice house in a home economics program, and that really happened for many, many years and many, many college campuses, and so that was kind of a kick. What would happen to such a person was the question at hand. And then my next historical novel was my previous one. It was called Time After Time. It was historical. It was a bit of a time travel story. It was a bit of a ghost story. It was really a little bit of everything. And it was set in Grand Central Terminal with a woman who, for complicated reasons, cannot escape Grand Central Terminal, but falls in love with a man who works there. And then came this one, set in 1924, and really inspired by, for better and worse, by the times we're living in, and by the incredible vitriol and separations that seem to be faced by our country right now. And the unfortunately familiar battle over what should be taught in our schools. So this was set during the Scopes trial, which happened in 1925, 99 years ago, and was about whether evolution should be taught in the Tennessee schools, and was a huge cause celeb at the time.
It's such a fascinating story, and you're absolutely correct that it feels so urgent right now. I first encountered the Scopes trial through a production of Inherit the Wind in like the early aughts. And I remember at the time being like, oh, how quaint, look at this far back time, this benighted era. And encountering it again now feels so much more prescient. And so what drew you to this case in particular? Was there a particular, individual or actor or the um, a an event in it? Like, was there an inception point or entry point for you?
Well, like you, I was familiar with Inherit the Wind and very, very affected by it when I first saw it as a movie, as a younger, excuse me, as a younger person. I found out while I was doing the research for this novel, which took me a while, that a lot of people haven't heard of the Scopes case and a lot of people have never seen Inherit the Wind. So when I started, it was because I was looking for a time in American history where people, where families could be as divided as they seem to be now, where a dinner table conversation, you know, at a holiday might be become really fractious because. So I thought about the Vietnam War, I thought about the Civil War, and then I thought about this. And as you know from Inherit the Wind, that play, which was actually written as a parable for the Red Scare, and the idea that free ideas, ideas could not be free and free speech was being imperiled. That play slash movie made the two sides seem so very different that I thought, aha, great. You know, all this versus all that, religion versus science, evolution versus Darwin, modernism versus traditionalism. And implicitly in Inherit the Wind, there's sort of free speech versus repression and, you know, new ideas versus fear. I mean, that's really how it was presented. And that was sort of my beginning. And then very, very quickly, I realized that the actual trial and the town was not nearly as black and white, as clearly divided as the play had made it seem, as the movie had depicted. And I became more fascinated by it just because of that. I thought I'd really like to know what it was like to be in Dayton, you know, to be a young woman in Dayton who's grown up believing a certain set of things that in her case are very spiritual, very religious, very church-bound, and then to have this circus of a trial descend because it really was a circus. Well, it really wasn't a circus, but it had circus aspects, including, you know, chimpanzees and popcorn and funnel cake and lemonade on the stands. And a lot more people than had ever come to Dayton before, which was only a town of 2,000 people and two paved roads. So I was fascinated by the idea that maybe it wasn't all or nothing. Maybe the citizens of Dayton were not quite as rabble-rousingly determined to reject all modern ideas as the movie and play had made them seem.
Yeah, it does introduce a lot of nuance into sort of like how the conversation moves through the town. And I'm really fascinated by Annabelle as our point of view character in this, because she's such a lovely kind of bundle of contradictions in some ways. Like, she is very prescient and very insightful and very clever, but she's also naive and she's very timid in some ways, but she has got a lot of fight in her as well. So could you talk about how you landed on her as your you know, your point of view character for the story?
Well, I really wanted somebody who was of the town and who starts out with a set of expectations that are completely not met. She's orphaned at a very early age by her parents dying from the Spanish flu. So she has to make her way on her own. And in that, she's got some backbone and spunk, and we love spunk. We love a feisty woman. But her dream when she starts, when the book starts and when she starts out, is that she'll find a husband and get married and have children and have a lovely Christian home. And she's marvelously shocked to find George falling in love with her in very, very shortly after they meet, and she feels rescued by him. He is a lawyer. He's from another town, a bigger town, and has had much more education. He calls her nicknames that by the end of the book are annoying to her and probably to the reader as well. But he's very protective of her and very sweet. And she has every expectation that they'll live happily ever after and have a family, and stay in Dayton and raise their family there. And so I wanted to create this character who was not a blank slate exactly, but as far as what comes to the town, certainly somebody who's impressionable and needs to figure out what she actually believes, not what her parents believed, not what her neighbor believes, and not what her townspeople, her colleague, her friends believe, but what she does, and above all, what she does believe compared to what her husband believes and what the town believes. When I started writing this, I thought, oh, okay, this is this division. So clearly she must start out on one side and end up on the other side. And that's not what happens. I didn't want that to happen in the end. I wanted there to be some more nuance to it. I think that, you know, on the fringes of our society right now, just as was true in 99 years ago, there are people who won't even listen to one another's point of view. But I think that between those two extremes, there are people who are very capable of listening to one another's point of view and benefit from it. So I wanted her to be one of those people.
Yeah, there's a really nice, like what I really appreciated about her character, I feel like, is that so many stories, and indeed like our media, I think, often posit like science and religion as completely mutually exclusive or just, you know, diametrically opposed ideas. But I love that like Annabelle's faith is actually what gives her her strength and also her non-judgmental approach to new ideas.
Exactly.
You know, it's a really lovely depiction, I think, of how, you know, a religion works through an individual as opposed to like through a society, you know?
Thank you. Yes, that's what I was trying to do. You got it. That's exactly what I was trying to convey. So it's heartening to hear that it came across.
Could you talk a little bit about populating your town, because there's a lot of really great side characters, some of who are real, and some of whom are not, I imagine. Could you talk a little bit about who was your favorite character outside of Annabelle to write, and who was the most challenging?
Interesting. I think my favorite character to write was Lottie Nelson. She's a journalist who comes to town and stays with George and Annabelle, as many people stayed with townspeople because there just weren't enough rooms in hotels or inns. There were only a couple of hotels in the town. She is based on a real woman, an extraordinary woman named Nellie Kenyon, who worked for the Nashville Times. In any case, Nellie Kenyon was the first person to get a press pass of anyone in the country to the trial, because she knew, Chattanooga News, by the way, she knew that this was going to be a big deal. She was the only woman reporter who was in the mix of the early people following it. In the book, she becomes not exactly Annabelle's mentor, but certainly another version, another idea of what a woman could be in 1924. Lottie, has a big career as a reporter, as Nellie Kenyon did as well. And she takes Annabelle under her wing, noticing that Annabelle's a photographer, you know, an amateur photographer, but she kind of brings her into the trial to follow the trial as a photographer. And she's more of a modern woman than anyone Annabelle's ever met. And I loved writing her. I mean, She was based on Nellie Kenyon in terms of her experience, but she was based on a, to some extent, on a very good friend of mine who has just that kind of spirit and talent and independence and skinny legs. So, yeah, I mean, she, I think I enjoyed writing her most. And then as far as the challenging characters, probably William Jennings Bryan himself, because I really didn't want to make him a caricature as the as Inherit the Wind did. I wanted to try to understand where he was at his life. I mean, it turns out he was at the end of his life, though he didn't know how close to the end he was. He actually died 5 years, 5 days after the trial ended. But I really immersed myself in his writings. He was supposedly the greatest speaker, the greatest orator of his time. And it's hard now to understand that he, you know, this was before microphones. I mean, most of his career was before microphones, and he would stand up and mesmerize thousands of people. He ran for president 3 times and never made it. But by the time we meet him in the book, he is the advocate of religion and fundamentalism in a way that he hadn't been earlier in his career to that extent, but he had really seized upon this and become the leading figure. I wanted to be really careful in writing him because, again, I didn't want him to be a stock figure. So I, there's a lot of his speaking in the book that's directly taken from speeches that he gave, things that he said in the courtroom. I have the trial transcript, and a lot of it is in the book. But I think that was where I wanted to be most careful, not to make him a stock figure.
That is really challenging. I think, especially when historical figures do become so charged with meaning or, you know, become, I guess, you know, tools in modern conversations about politics and beliefs and stuff like that. But like, nobody is the villain of their own life, you know, so you have to sort of figure out like what drives them anyway, even if it doesn't, you know, make sense to you. That seems like a really interesting challenge.
It was. I mean, I'm you know, I'm a New York Jew. I grew up in very, very, very different time and a very different setting and a very different tradition than Annabelle and certainly than William Jennings Bryan. I really wanted to try to understand and express what it would mean to be in such a different place. One of my, you know, you get sometimes early reader reviews, and one of my favorites so far has been, if you love Southern fiction, dot dot dot. It's like, what a joy, you know? I mean, here I am sitting in New York, and somehow I really did make someone think that, you know, this is Southern fiction, and it's certainly intended to be. I mean, it's set in the South, and it's about Southerners, but I was particularly heartened to know that that's how it came across, and I think William Jennings Bryan is part of that. I'm very much a part of that, and I didn't want to make him seem ridiculous in any way. I mean, Bryan College is in Dayton, Tennessee, to this day, and you can't take an entire group of believers and make them seem ridiculous, if you really want to understand what and how they feel. So, yeah, Brian.
It's, yeah, really lovely. And thank you so much for coming to talk about this book with us. I'm really excited to share it with our patrons here. I know that authors can't always talk about what they're working on now, but like, is there something on your horizon? Are you writing at the moment?
I am. I'm writing a new novel. I'm also writing an adaptation of my last novel for a movie. I mean, I'm writing a screenplay based on the last novel. But the main focus is the new novel, about which I would say, happily say, what it's about if I had figured it out yet, but I haven't.
Well, good luck. I'm very excited to see what it
Thanks so much. So am I, actually.
is. We both live in hope, we'll see. Thank you again for joining us. This has been really, really lovely. Listeners, it's now your turn. You're going to check out The Evolution of Annabelle Craig. It's really, really lovely. And I think it's going to give you a very interesting new perspective on a story you think you know. So check it out. This has been Jen. Thank you for joining us. It is now time to close this chapter.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.